Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org.
All right, welcome back to Baptist Basics University. I'm Matthew Gage, taking advantage of a rare time to try to record two lessons in a row at the moment, though you probably will be listening to these separately. They won't be released at the same time. But anyway, this is lesson number 5 in our Bible survey series. And today we're trying to finish up the Old Testament. We've got two more lessons to go. And today we will look at the major prophets. All right, now, there are 17 books at the end of the Old Testament. That's after the Song of Solomon. There's 17 books that were written by, or maybe even portions about, the prophets of Israel. And to kind of break this up, a lot of people will divide them into two groups, major and minor prophets. Now, that has nothing to do with status or saying, you know, hey, Isaiah is better than Amos. That has nothing to do with that. It's mainly for length of the books that this happens. Now, Daniel is kind of the exception. He gets thrown in with the major prophets, but that has more to do with some of the stuff he covers. We'll get to him here in a little bit. And there's also one book that is kind of not really a poem, but we'll deal with that. That's the Book of Lamentations. Okay, so in this lesson, what we're going to look at is the first 5 prophetical books that we call the major prophets, and that's Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, and Daniel. Now, before we get started, let's look at what a prophet is. Now, we've had prophets jump in and out of the storyline. We've had Elijah. We've had Elisha. You know, we've had Nathan. We've had a bunch of different guys who the Bible calls as prophets in the historical books. Prophets, if you want to study it out, a lot of people say that Moses kind of set up that institution. I like to say, if I'm explaining this especially to like little kids nowadays, that these are just, you know, preachers in the Old Testament. It's not really totally accurate, but that's kind of the easiest, you know, explanation for a first grader. But these guys came from all different walks of life, a lot of different circumstances. Tradition says that Isaiah was royalty. And you have guys, I think Amos, I believe it was says he was like a shepherd. I mean, these guys come from just a wide variety of circumstances. Daniel was a captive who became, you know, prime minister in the land. And, Jonah, you know, we know his story. He ends up getting swallowed by a whale. You know, every one of these guys is unique. Everyone has their own unique personality. And, and some of these, the only thing we really know about them is this book that they wrote. They don't really figure into the historical narrative, but we have preserved for us, you know, their message that they preached. Now, let's look at real quick, before we go in, because there's really not rhyme or reason why these books are ordered the way they are in the Bible. So I want to give you an outline just to kind of help you fit where these guys fit into history. And basically, we'll divide them into 3 different categories. We have those that were pre-captivity, and that's the Babylonian captivity of Judah, the Babylonian captivity itself, and then post-captivity. And not to say that some of these guys don't overlap somewhat, but just to give you an idea of where they would fit, if we were to put these guys chronologically, this is kind of how the order would work. We'd have the pre-captivity. We'd have Obadiah, Joel, Jonah, Amos, Hosea, Isaiah, Micah, Nahum, Zephaniah, Habakkuk, and Jeremiah. They would all be pre-Babylonian captivity. Well, after Nebuchadnezzar has come and conquered the people and their captives, and while they're in the Babylonian captivity, the 70-year period there, we have Ezekiel, and we have Daniel. And then post-captivity, after they have been allowed to return to the land, we have Zechariah, Haggai, and Malachi, who is the last prophet to write about 400 years or so before Christ. So that's kind of how this would work if we were to put them into like a chronological order. But like I said, there's not really rhyme or reason why they're grouped the way they are, but we do have the longer books at the beginning. The longest books are Isaiah, Ezekiel, and Jeremiah. And those are kind of pushed to the front at, basically for the sheer size of the books is what most people assume. But they're not even grouped by order because some of the minor prophets, you know, actually, you know, are, you know, 10, 13 something chapters long. I mean, it's not like they're little bitty short books. So that'll kind of get you a good idea, I hope, of kind of what we'll be dealing with in the next, in this lesson and the next. And this one hopefully won't be too bad. I'm going to have to do some more studying before we jump into the minor prophets. That is, I've been preparing the notes on that. I'm really having to brush up on some stuff and dig in to try to just to even hit the highlights because, boy, those poor guys are neglected. And having to go back and try to put together, you know, and see what the theme of some of those books were. Well, I have different interpretations in my different reference books I've been using. And, you know, I've been leaning very heavily on, I talked about in the previous one, the AMG Concise Bible Survey. And another reference I've been using quite a bit is just J. Vernon McGee's Through the Bible commentary, and also using my Schofield Reference Bible too. But those are kind of the three main books that I've been using. And I'm going to actually put those kind of at the end of the notes somewhere just so for reference, especially that survey book, because I think it's very handy if you can get your hands on one. But anyway, let's jump on in with this lesson as we cover the major prophets. The first book, almost need a sound effect, need a little ding or something, you know, before we jump in here. The first one we'll deal with is the book of Isaiah. Now, the good thing about this is basically whatever the name of the book is who wrote it. Now, Lamentations was written by Jeremiah, so I kept that slot in this outline that I'm going by here. In the minor prophets, I dropped it because basically all of them assumably wrote their own books, so as far as we can tell. But the author of Isaiah is Isaiah, and his prophecies take place between 760 and 698 BC, thereabout. And let me talk a little bit about the book of Isaiah. I love the book of Isaiah. Of all the prophetical books, Isaiah might just be my favorite. There's a number of prophecies about Jesus, about the Messiah. One of the most beautiful chapters in the entire Bible is chapter 53. That is just an amazing chapter. Boy, it stirs my heart every time I read that chapter. But the book of Isaiah is also a favorite of critics, of those who want to correct the Bible or dig a lot deeper than I think was intended, or in ways that were never intended. And there are people, if you study the book of Isaiah, and even some of my reference books will at least mention this, that there are theories out there that maybe there were two Isaiahs, and that actually, you know, somebody else wrote one half and somebody else wrote one half, and it got crammed together. And there is a marked change of theme and of the message and to some extent the style, but that does not mean two different people wrote this. But there are two big divisions in the book of Isaiah, but that does not mean one person wrote one person wrote the other. And there's even some people go so far as to think like three people wrote the book of Isaiah. But listen, all those people, as far as I'm concerned, they're digging way too deep. That it makes no sense. I don't know what that proves, other than, you know, to make yourself try to sound smart, but you're really just missing the point, because Isaiah wrote it all. And if Isaiah didn't write it all, it's still there. It's still Bible. It's still good stuff. But as far as the testimony of the scriptures, Isaiah wrote it all. Okay. I've got very simple outlines, and I'm going to kind of reference J. Vernon McGee's outlines to kind of help me through this. The broad divisions of the book of Isaiah. We have chapters 1 through 39 is the judgment of God. And then chapters 40 through 66 is the salvation of Israel. And boy, there are just so many things in this book. And I say the first section, the judgment of God section, it's a lot darker. There's a lot of it talks a lot about judgment that's coming, and also contains one of my favorite. In fact, if I had a life verse, which I don't know that we have to have one, but if someone ever asked me what my life verse is, or the few times I've been asked to like sign somebody's Bible, which was more for giggles than respect for me, I guarantee you, I will put Isaiah 6:8 as my kind of as my life verse, and which I have a hard time quoting, but or in nailing precisely. But it's, and also I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" Then said I, "Here am I, send me." That's, you know, if somebody asks me what my life verse is, that's just what I tell them right there. But I love the book of Isaiah. I've read it through a number of times. I'm not an expert at it. It's been quite a while since I've done a big study on it. That's why I'm going to kind of default back and cheat and use some other references. And that's also one of the fun things about studying all these prophets is every one of them is unique. Every one of them is pretty much addressing unique situations from a different, or at least from a different angle. And in some cases, like Isaiah and Jeremiah and Ezekiel, there's a whole lot of stuff happening in these. There's 66 chapters to Isaiah. You really cannot do this book justice in 5 minutes or 10 minutes. You really need 30 minutes or an hour to even scratch the surface. But you'll see, there's a lot of messianic prophecies too mixed in with it. You know, even in the darkest prophecies, it'll mix it in. There's also, in this section, Isaiah is going to be predicting judgment on Israel and on Jeremiah. That's a common on Israel, on Judah. That's a common theme throughout these pre-captivity prophets, is that they are saying judgment is coming. Now, they don't know necessarily what it is, but they are saying that judgment is coming for the sins of the people. And not just for, and they'll even branch out from Israel itself and the people and the Jews and talk about other nations that judgment is coming for them. And so the common theme for almost all of these pre-captivity prophets is judgment's coming, and trying to warn the people to change their ways and repent before judgment falls on them. But for instance, chapters 13 through 23, there's a burdens that are that Isaiah has with Babylon, Moab, Damascus, Ethiopia, Egypt, Babylon, Edom, Arabia, and Tyre, and all the, so, you know, it's not just focusing on what's happening in Judea and, you know, in Jerusalem. It is branching out, and he's talking about other places and other people. And another great thing about the book of Isaiah is that he will talk quite a bit about the millennial kingdom. He'll jump not just from the present day, but he'll look forward to what is happening, and what will happen with not just judgment coming, but he sees past that, and he sees the blessings of God returning, and he looks so far as to see the millennial kingdom of Christ. Which one of the things I want to do is do like an overview of kind of a prophecy and just kind of lay out all that kind of stuff. But basically, the millennial reign, if you're a pre-tribulational kind of guy like me. After, you know, the rapture, there's the 7-year tribulation period, then the second coming of Christ. That establishes the 1,000-year millennial kingdom, the reign of Christ on earth. And that's the time when the lion shall lay down with the lamb. And so many of the blessings and promises, you know, promised to, like, Israel, and a lot of that comes to fruition during that time, during the millennial kingdom. So Isaiah has prophecies with that in chapter 35. Now, chapters 36 through 39, I didn't break them out in the outline, but this is also something that happens in some of the, in a few of these books, where they'll suddenly break away from prophecy and it will be history. And in this case, there's history in chapters 36 through 39. And it's basically Isaiah's interactions with Hezekiah. It talks about the invasion of Sennacherib of Assyria. Then the being miraculously delivered from the Assyrian invaders. Then chapter 38 has Hezekiah getting sick, and Isaiah has to go tell him, hey, you're going to die. Hezekiah, you know, pours his heart out to God, and Isaiah goes back in and says, okay, God heard you, you're going to get to live a little longer. And then chapter 39 is the mistake that Hezekiah made. He shows the Babylonian ambassadors all the wealth and that the kingdom of Judea had. And basically Isaiah confronts him and says, you know, you're an idiot. You shouldn't have done that. You know, now they're just going to come and take it away from us with force. So, but that's a little historic interlude that is, in the middle of all this. And then chapters 40 through 66, really, this is where the positive side, I guess you could say, the first part talking about negative, judgment would be very negative. The second part, chapters 40 through 66, is a lot of beautiful things. A lot of it deals with God's salvation. And it's not to say there isn't negative things in there, but it's all in all, very, very beautiful thing. And as I say, Isaiah 53, talking about the suffering Savior, is just, as I say, it's one of my favorite chapters in the Bible. I'll flip to it over here and read you a passage of it. Isaiah 53, boy, I just want to read the whole thing. Who hath believed our report, and to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? For he shall go up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness, and when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him. It's all talking about, Christ coming. Verse 3, he is despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief, and we hid as it were our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Verse 4, surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we did esteem him stricken, smitten of God, and afflicted. Verse 5, but he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. Verse 6, all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. And I could go on through the whole thing, but you see the picture, the prophecy of God's servant, as it talks about, chapter 52 talks about, behold, my servant should deal prudently, but it's a prophecy about the Messiah, about Jesus Christ. It talks about him bearing our transgressions and wounded for our transgressions, bruised for our iniquities. It's talking about him, carrying our sins. It's just, just amazing book. I love verse 11. It says, he shall see, talking about God, it says, he shall see the travail of his soul, that's talking about Christ, and shall be satisfied. This talks about how the work of atonement, the salvation for mankind, is achieved, that God looks down, sees the work of Christ, and is satisfied with it. And there's nothing else we can do or add to it. Just amazing. Love that chapter. Anyway, like some of the guys you say in Bible college, that'll preach. It's good stuff there. But anyway, that's the book of Isaiah. I don't want to just keep rambling and rambling and rambling on with that. The book of Jeremiah is the next one, which, of course, was written by, you guessed it, Jeremiah. Now, he takes place, he prophesied, his ministry was a little bit later than Isaiah, 629 to 588 BC. And Jeremiah is often called the weeping prophet. His prophecies are very negative, shall we say. And even his ministry is negative in a lot of the things that happen to him. I mean, he's arrested. He's almost public enemy number one for just speaking God's message that God gave him. The overall subject of the book is the impending judgment of God upon Judah. And you can tell why Jeremiah was not a popular guy, because he was saying, hey, judgment's coming. And the people would rather hear the guys that would smile and tell them, oh, God loves you and everything's going to be fine. But Jeremiah was the one that was preaching the truth and suffered for it. And in fact, some people say, you know, he was alone. Well, he did have a scribe that was with him, but anyway, I mean, this guy led a lonely, lonely ministry. In fact, someone said, you know, there's no record of him having a convert, which, I don't know. You know, he does have a guy helping him at one point. So, you know, I don't know, you could say that. But basically, no one listened to Jeremiah. Now, the first chapter of Jeremiah, I'll tell you, is a very special chapter for me. It's God's call of Jeremiah, and it is something that when I was younger and, just starting to preach a few times, you know, I was like in middle school and even kind of on up in high school, I'd get very nervous, and I would read Jeremiah chapter 1, just because it'd say, verse 6, "Then said I, Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak, for I'm a child. But the Lord said unto me, Say not, I am a child, for thou shalt go to all that I send thee, and whatsoever I command thee, thou shalt speak. Be not afraid of their faces, for I am with thee to deliver thee, saith the Lord." And so I used to read that chapter every time. Right before I'd go up to preach, I would be reading that chapter. It was such a comfort to me. As I kind of claim those promises to Jeremiah. In fact, and I've showed that to other people, and that's been a blessing to them too. Some younger preachers that, you know, would get nervous. And that's just something, a habit I picked up. I don't do it now. I don't get as nervous now. I don't know if I'm used to it or what. But especially because it talked about as a child, and that was one thing. You know, hey, I'm a little kid. No one's going to listen to me. I'm just a sophomore in high school. Why should anybody listen to me? And a lot of people will go and, you know, go to, you know, Timothy and say, you know, let no man despise thy youth. Well, I always went to Jeremiah chapter 1, and that was a blessing to me. So here's an outline of the book of Jeremiah. Chapter 1 is the call of Jeremiah. Chapters 2 through 45 are prophecies against Judah, which you can tell why he wasn't very popular. He's prophesying against his nation, his people, the people all around him. Chapters 46 through 51 are prophecies against other nations. And then there's a chapter 52 is kind of, and we'll call it a postscript, but it's just historically the fulfilling of those prophecies of the destruction of Jerusalem. So we could go into a lot of things. There's a lot of things with Jeremiah. You know, God forbids him to marry in chapter 16, 17, as a sign of what was to come. He's persecuted in chapter 20. Now in chapter 25 is kind of important. God reveals to him the 70-year captivity. So he actually tells Jeremiah how long the people will be captive in Babylon. So that's very important. And we see Daniel will study that. We'll get to that in a little bit. Chapter 31 is called the I Will chapter. That's Satan talking about, I will do this, I will do that. So I believe that's right. In Isaiah 31, I'm going to look it up, make sure I'm not telling you something wrong. Oh, no, no, I'm sorry. That's wrong. That's what I get for reading an outline. I thought that was what that was. Nope, it's not. But it's a lot of promises there. But anyway, yeah. I thought that wasn't right. As soon as I said that, I thought, wait a minute. I thought that was somewhere else. Anyway, forget I said that. I'm not going to edit it out because I like to keep it real. Chapter 32, Jeremiah's imprisoned again. He actually does buy land, too, in that chapter as a sign that, hey, we are coming back out of captivity. Not all hope is lost. And let's see here. Chapter 39, Judah goes into captivity. Jeremiah's finally released from prison. He ends up going down to Egypt, spends his last days down there. And that's where, you know, the later chapters are, where he's talking about other nations. Most of that was written down in Egypt. So, and then, of course, we have chapter 52, which is the, which is just kind of the historical finale to the book, which just basically records the fulfillment of the prophecies of Jeremiah that, yes, Judah did fall. Okay, the next book is Lamentations. Now, this one was not written by a guy named Lamentations. This book was written by Jeremiah. And it was written in 588 BC, and it's was written to lament the fall of Jerusalem. Now, from a literary standpoint, it's lost in here, but it's not really a poem per se. But it's kind of like, I don't know what you call it, like an acrostic. Is that the, let me get my Bible up here in my hands. And I'll show you this. There are 22 verses in chapter 1. There are 22 verses in chapter 2. There are 66 in chapter 3. There's 22 in chapter 4. And there's 22 in chapter 5. It's lost in translation, but there are 22 letters in the Hebrew alphabet. And if you were to read this in Hebrew, the first, it would be, let me say, if this was English, let me do it this way. That first verse would start with A. The second verse would start with B. The third verse would start with C and go on through the alphabet. And the, now the third chapter is different. It actually, I'm trying to think, remember, it actually goes in and is, it's three verses per letter, if I remember correctly. That's why it's 66 verses. But the way this book was written was, I can't remember the name of that device that's used there, but I say every verse starts with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet and then goes through, and every verse in each chapter, or at least chapters 1, 2, 4, and 5, just in order, every verse starts with the letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And then chapter 3 goes through three times. Acrostic dirge. An acrostic dirge is what I just looked down and saw that's what Schofield calls it. Yes, and that is correct. Verses 1 through 3 of our version form, but three lines of the original, each beginning with A, etc. That's, you know, Schofield notes. So, yeah, I was right. I've been studying so far ahead. I read all this stuff, but, boy, you know, it's easy to lose your mind, especially when you get into trying to study out the scope of this and keep all this straight. Okay, so that is Lamentations. It's a very dark book. It's a very sad book. We didn't go over our outline. Chapter 1 is the devastation of Jerusalem. Chapter 2 is the destruction of Jerusalem. Chapter 3 is Jeremiah's lament. Chapter 4 is Judah's loss, and chapter 5 is Judah's prayer. And Lamentations is one of the most overlooked books in the Bible. A lot of people don't spend much time there, especially from here. basically from here on, there's a lot of books that people just ignore. That Daniel and Jonah people like, but a lot of these books people ignore, and Lamentations is one of them. Okay, Ezekiel. Our next book is Ezekiel. Good old Ezekiel. Time frame for his ministry, 595 to 574 BC. So that puts him kind of before and during and after the the fall of Jerusalem and the captivity. And basically the theme of Ezekiel is the fullness of judgment against Judah, but also the promise of restoration. And there's the two broad divisions this book falls under is the two broad divisions that we have here is the prophecies of judgment, chapters 1 through 32, and then the prophecies of restoration in chapters 33 through 48. Book of Ezekiel was a very interesting guy. He does things in his ministry no other prophets do. He does a lot of God has him do a lot of object lessons, and a lot of them are very difficult to make sense of, shaving his hair and different things like that. He's a very interesting character. Just he himself, he really, really is. But, trying to go through here and see if there's anything really I want to cover in depth. For the sake of time, I don't really want to. I want to spend a little bit more time on the book of Daniel, just because I think you need a little bit more help understanding that. But okay, I don't really see much in here. I want to bring out the one thing I do. Chapter 37, probably if you want the most memorable passage in the book of Ezekiel, it's chapter 37, and that is the vision of the Valley of Dry Bones. And it's just a prophecy of, God bringing back, resurrecting, restructuring Israel. So, but that's chapter 37. That's probably the most memorable passage in the book of Ezekiel. Okay, the book of Daniel. Daniel's ministry, 607 to 534 BC, thereabout. Very long life, very long ministry, and an amazing book. Now, for everything we know, Daniel wrote this book. The subject of this book is God's sovereignty over the nations. Now, as I say, this book is not nearly as long as Isaiah, Jeremiah, or Ezekiel, but when we get in and start looking at the prophecies in the book of Daniel, we'll see that if there is a major prophet, Daniel is one. And boy, there is so much of this. We hear so many of these stories, even in stories from this in Sunday school. There's such great stuff here. Broad outline, chapters 1 through 6 are historical events. Chapters 7 through 12 are future events, if you just want a very broad deal. But, we can start in chapter 1. Daniel's taken captive. That's where him and his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, if you want to use their Hebrew names, which would probably be a whole lot more fitting than using the pagan names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that they were given. But anyway, that's what we usually call them now. But there's the decision that they have to not eat the king's meat and to stay true to their beliefs and to the Jewish diet. That's in chapter 1. Chapter 2 is Nebuchadnezzar having a dream about the big image, and Daniel interprets it about the four kingdoms that are coming. And this is what's amazing about the book of Daniel is the prophecies laying out what would come. He prophesies he talks about there's a Babylonian Empire now. Then there's going to be he describes the Persian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire. Then he describes the Greek Empire. And finally, he even describes the Roman Empire. Doesn't call them out by name, but but he does lay out that outline that these major powers would rule in that area. And that's one of the first ones right there. Chapter 3 is the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. They wouldn't bow down to the idol, and they're thrown in the fiery furnace. Chapter 4 is interesting. It's Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and he goes mad. And very interesting, at the end of that, he basically confesses, you know, faith in God. Very interesting. Chapter 5 is the downfall of Babylon, as foretold by Daniel. So the handwriting on the wall at the Feast of Belshazzar. And then chapter 6 is Daniel in the lion's den with Darius the Mede. You know, the Medo-Persians have now taken over and defeated the Babylonians. And Daniel maintains, you know, a high rank through all this, and how he's cast in the den of lions. And then, anyway, that's chapter 6. So, I mean, really, 5 of those 6 chapters, the one we may not really talk that much about is Nebuchadnezzar going mad, but the rest of those, 5 of those 6 chapters, I mean, boy, it's like classic Sunday school material. It's just, they're great stories, and we hear a lot about those. That's part of what makes Daniel such a great book, is that history that it's given. As he's taken away captive into Babylon and is put into service there, and basically eventually becomes one of the top rulers in the, you know, in the kingdom underneath the kings. And then even when the Medo-Persian Empire takes over, Daniel still maintains status as one of the most powerful men in their kingdom also. Okay, chapters 7 through 12, though, as I say, this turns into the prophetical portion. And talks a little bit more. Chapter 7 talks about the four beasts, which are pictures of those four kingdoms to come. Okay, well, let me give you a broad overview of what Daniel covers. Daniel's going to talk quite a bit, kind of a timeline, and explain these kingdoms that will be coming. And it's another thing, he's going to give hints about the Antichrist. Another thing is he is going to lay out the 70 weeks, and we'll talk about that here in just a second, but basically sets up a timeline for the rest of time. And I'll explain it here in a minute. Chapter 8 is a vision of the ram and the he-goat and the little horn. Some people see Alexander the Great and some of that. Chapter 9 is the 70 weeks. And chapters 10 through 12 is kind of explaining what's going to happen. Daniel prayed. God sends an angel to deliver that, but he's hindered, and he finally arrives with it. That's chapter 10. Verse 11 talks about the Persian Greece and stuff. Chapter 12 talks about the Great Tribulation and the end times. It really it focuses more on the end times. The 70 weeks is what I want to talk about. Basically, Daniel sets up a timeline, and I'm going to flip over there to it in this book here. Okay, the 70 weeks. These are, we interpret, it talks about weeks. The Hebrew word means a group of 7. And what we do is we say that these are groups of 7 years. So the 70 weeks are 70 groups of years, or 490 years. And let's see here. 70, okay, 9 verse 24. 70 weeks are determined upon thy people and upon the holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, and to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, and seal up the vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Okay, as I say, 1 week equals 7 years, 70 weeks equals 490 years. These are divided into 3 periods in this. And the 3 periods are, the first one is 7 weeks, the next is 62, and then there's a final 1 week. And okay, Here's the chart I was looking for. Okay. Where is the first time? Okay. This is verse number 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build the to build Jerusalem unto the Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Okay. So from the command to restore and build Jerusalem, that took place in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes. The date here in J. Vernon McGee's, which may differ from mine a little bit, from the Usher dates, I'm not sure exactly which one he uses, is 445 BC. And then it talks about these two periods, this the 7 weeks and the 62 weeks, 49 and 432, all that to when the Messiah... To the Messiah. Okay. And it says, and after 62 weeks, so after that 62, you know, the 62 weeks period, this is verse number 26, shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. Okay, right there we have talked about the Messiah. What happened? He got cut off. He died. Here it's saying it's going to be this many years in between the decree to rebuild Jerusalem. It's going to be 69 weeks, which is what, 483 weeks, 483 years between the decree to rebuild Jerusalem to Messiah dying on the cross, being cut off. Okay. Then there's a hiatus between the 69th and the 70th week, what we would call the times of the Gentiles, the church age. And this is the tribulation period. And it's even separated a little bit in the text here. Let's see here. But not for himself. And the people of the prince shall destroy the city, and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war desolations are determined. Verse 27, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week, that's talking about the 70th week, and in the midst of the week he shall cause sacrifice and the oblation to cease, that's the Antichrist offering the abomination of desolation during the middle of, and breaking his treaty with Israel in the middle of the tribulation period. And for overspreading of abominations, he shall make it desolate, even until the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. So, what we have here is kind of a outline of human history, and that we know from the 20th year of Artaxerxes, which is Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 1 through 8, to the command to rebuild Jerusalem, to Christ. That actually, if you read, there's a book out, it's an old book, and I'm going to say it's, it's kind of dry reading, but there's a guy named Robert Anderson, Sir Robert Anderson. He actually, a very interesting character. He was head of Scotland Yard, or member of Scotland Yard. No, he's head of Scotland Yard during like the Jack the Ripper case years. Anyway, was a Bible student. He did a lot of study on this, wrote a book, and prove chronologically how all that worked. Now, the book is a commentary on the book of Daniel. It's called The Coming Prince. And he actually has charts and stuff, and he proves, you know, that this works. Now, like everything with dates, you know, you got to take it all with a grain of salt. His guess is as good as anybody's, just like Usher's is as good as anybody's when you're talking about time that long ago. But just the fact that you can make it work, that, and I think that's part of the deal with the Jews at the time of Christ. I think they realized something was supposed to happen. They really realized that the Messiah should be coming sometime soon. I think there were Jews that understood that. That's just, you know, kind of my opinion. But yeah, 483 years in, from that decree to the death of Christ. And as I say, then that 70th week is yet to come. And that will come later. That is the tribulation period. So... anyway, that's the 70 weeks. I wanted to cover that in detail just because it's interesting, and this kind of going away from my Bible survey a little bit, but I think that's something that, very interesting, you need to know. And if you can remember that Daniel deals with that, you really understand a lot about the book of Daniel. Now, just some memorable passages I threw into the notes. The fiery furnace takes place in chapter 3, Daniel lions in chapter 6, and then you have Daniel 70 weeks in chapter 9 and 24 through 27, which I think I read most of. So anyway, sorry to get bogged down there, especially since I flew through Ezekiel and Jeremiah pretty much. But it's like that is why Daniel is grouped with the major prophets. It's not the length of the book, it's just how deep the book is and the importance of those timeline events that Daniel gives. So anyway, that's our lesson. Boy, we made it through. I'm surprised it's as long as it is, but we made it through. Check out BaptistBasics.org for other resources. Email me at podcast@BaptistBasics.org. I'd appreciate to hear from you. Appreciate if you use iTunes, give me a rating on my podcast in iTunes. Other than that, that's it for now. Well, one more thing. Like my page on Facebook and keep up with me. You can find the link on the homepage of BaptistBasics.org. But anyway, if you do that, I'd appreciate that too. I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today. I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you.